Tanya Dungaskigon, then on Zewa Dahusadache, Ungahuan, and Hadiwanodos, Nene Aboriginal Voices, Oska Dewa Nyawar Oska, Ne Jota FM, CFRC.
Come on out October 16th, 17th, and 18th for two mega sales under one roof. The Quality Inn Hotel at 33 Benson Street is hosting its Zara-branded outerwear sale and mega sports sale featuring jackets, parkas, jerseys, hoodies, toques, and more just in time for those cooler temperatures. Students get a 10% discount on everything. Head out to the Quality Inn 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Thursday and Friday, and then on Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. for great deals on outerwear and sports apparel.
And it is 6 o'clock, and you're tuned to CFRC 101.9 FM. Ani Nichkiwenk, Doug Farquhar, Jijnikos. Miwa Sean Story, Esna Minwa, and Shnubby, Nuewin. Here we go, Sean. It's an interesting evening today at campus, but here we go with the Aboriginal Voices, and right here from Carruthers Hall, Queen's University. How are you?
Good. How are you, Doug?
I'm doing much better and having fun now. I guess it's the change in temperature. You know, we've gone from mid to high 20s into the 30s through the summer and no rain, and all of a sudden everything's looking better. Yeah. And the temperature's great. Yeah, last week.
Early morning frost.
Yeah, last week, I think it was Thursday morning, we had a little bit, and Friday morning, we had a lot of frost. Yeah. So, I was out. It was fun. I should have taken, before the sun came up, I should have been out with my camera, because the leaves on the ground, some of the ones down near the creek, because it's lower in elevation by the creek, and some of them were just lightly frosted on the tips, so outlining, you know, like it's just like they take in a little bit of water and then dipped it in sugar, coarse sugar or something like that. Anyway, you've seen those echo cakes come to mind. How about you? What's it like there?
We had frost probably like Friday, I think last Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully Saturday too. We had a humongous rainstorm at some point last week.
Hmm.
I don't know what day that was. Anyways, a lot of rain.
Yeah.
Which was also nice. It was unfortunate, though, that that couldn't have came sooner.
Yeah, like late August, early September.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, that's all right. It'll work.
I mean, no point in complaining about it.
Yeah. Well, actually, you're right in no complaints. We have a lot to share with listeners here on Aboriginal Voices tonight. And, we're going to have some fun. I'll just give you a quick introduction to what's coming up over the next 2 hours. I did an interview and I went to a lecture on October the 8th. A pharmacist, he's a prof at U of T in Toronto, but he was here at the medical building talking to doctors who are faculty members, medical students. I even met a few students who were from other disciplines visiting to hear the pharmacist talk about a number of things related to healthcare within the communities. And so we're going to share that. But before the lecture, I also had a chance to sit down with him and do an interview, which was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. That's all I'm going to say. Yeah, we'll do that. And I'm hoping that we get all the technical stuff organized to be able to put his presentation on. He gave us permission to share it with everybody.
All right.
Yeah. I wanted to mention, too, that a couple weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, we had two people shadowing with us here at CFRC, right at the control board, and they had a lot of fun. Both of them said thank you very much. They really enjoyed it, and you know, and I guess since they enjoyed it and they must have passed that on, we've been offered another shadow. And she'll be coming in next week on the 21st. So yeah, we'll have some fun. We'll have to come up with new music and go back to playing all these different pieces of equipment that most people don't use these days. No, yeah, I'm not going to do tape. I'm not going to do the big reel tape. We'll just use small tapes.
Okay.
All right.
That will be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I do enjoy it when we have my shadow.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I do enjoy that. Maybe not all the time, but...
You're an excellent teacher. And so when you get someone there, you go into full relaxed, here's what you're going to do next, and the person doesn't have to panic, and you know, and just for the listeners, that this is something CFRC does when they train brand new engineer or programmers or hosts of shows, and they do the training, and here's all the equipment, this is what you need to do, and then they give you a chance to come in with a live lively or live hosts, and you get to observe and see what they do. And you and I have all these years that we've been doing this. Mm-hmm. We've included them in the program, whether they if they want to talk the first time. That's,
oh, definitely.
Yeah, we say go ahead, you know, chat with us, and 2 weeks ago were those two that we had in visiting.
Isabel and Harper.
Yeah, I mean, I was really impressed. They were poised, ready to go if they felt they comfortable enough to talk. But we gave them a challenge, and they introduced each other, but also interviewed each other, and that was impressive. Yeah, they're going to go far.
Fantastic, Douglas.
My name is Jairus Swidrovich. I am an assistant professor at the Leslie Dann Faculty of Pharmacy at the University of Toronto.
Jairus, welcome. I really appreciate you taking the time with us.
Thank you.
This is going to be a lot of fun for us, but then if you have to calm down, you just let me know, because you've been traveling all day, I think. And
yeah, it wasn't bad, like a 2.5-hour train ride.
Colors change for you?
Yes, yeah, it was actually quite pretty.
Yeah. It's amazing how you go. You're coming from the Toronto area to Kingston.
Yes.
And a couple 2 weeks ago, I was you know, Algonquin Park area, and then in Muskoka, and the traveling down, the colors were changing very rapidly as far as I could see. In a 6-hour drive, we saw it get progressively greener, which was weird. But so today you're getting sort of a light yellow and greenish colors to to the reds. So something we're following here on Aboriginal Voices. Now, you're here in Kingston to do some talking, but before we talk specifically about your work, I wanted to get into the interest that you have in pharmacy and what took you to university.
Yes.
Because we're going to have a lot of university students listening to this.
Of course. You know, I think that university was always just an intuitive next step for me. My mom did not go to university until I was in grade 3. And so I sat alongside her, even sometimes quite literally would go to her evening classes with her. And she did a bachelor's in what was called Native Studies at the time, and then went on to do a master's in Native Studies, and then taught Native Studies at the University of Saskatchewan for 20 years. So I grew up in academia, essentially, so there was really nothing scary about it for me, and I saw the benefits of a post-secondary education, particularly in university, and quite specifically at that university in my home city of Saskatoon. But my first plan, to be honest, was to be a high school drama and physics teacher.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, so I was first enrolled in courses to end up as a high school drama and physics teacher. But my friends who were already taking those steps and a few years into it asked me if I wanted a teaching contract in Saskatoon right after school. And I said, well, of course, that's home and where my family and friends are. And they said it would be very, very difficult and quite unlikely for me to find a teaching contract right out of school in Saskatoon. And so I kind of panicked and dropped all of those courses and then switched my entire plan to work toward medicine or pharmacy.
That's interesting. You know, I was going to ask, because pharmacy is more chemistry, mm-hmm. and a little bit of physics, but going from physics to chemistry and,
yep.
and but you did that, so you graduated as a pharmacist.
Yep.
Where did you go from there?
Yeah, so I did 2 years of arts and science first, and then pharmacy was a 4-year degree, a Bachelor of Science in Pharmacy in Saskatoon. And then worked for a year as a pharmacist in various capacities, in research, in community pharmacy at Costco Pharmacy in Saskatoon. I worked on the pediatric clinical team at the Royal University Hospital in Saskatoon, and did some consulting for some various programs and whatnot. Then I applied to and was accepted into what was a post-baccalaureate Doctor of Pharmacy, or PharmD degree, which at the time was kind of like a nurse practitioner equivalent in the pharmacy world. And it was seen at the time too as a terminal level degree in my discipline. So that was a 2-year full-time program in Toronto that I did 2011 to 2013, and then went back to Saskatoon again and worked as a clinical coordinator at the St. Paul's Hospital in Saskatoon, where I worked with adult inpatients living with HIV. And did that for a few years before moving over to the Faculty of Pharmacy at the University of Saskatchewan, and was there for 6 years. And during my 6 years there, I did a PhD in education. And now I've been at the University of Toronto for 4 years and counting.
Did you do a PhD in philosophy, or you're working on it now?
Well, no. I mean, every PhD essentially is called a Doctor of Philosophy,
and then
in a particular area. So, yeah, my PhD or Doctor of Philosophy was in education.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because when I read that, I thought, hey, wait a sec. a pharmacist and an outdoors person, and you know, you have this keen interest in people within your communities too.
I did take philosophy in my first year of university. It was an entire year course that ran 6 months. So hey, it really shaped me, actually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the other thing that I'm connecting here is that you said your mom mm-hmm. was a university prof. Yep. In Native Studies.
Yes.
Now, they've changed the name all over the country. They now call it Indigenous Studies,
yep.
or other names related to it. But when we start talking about Indigenous Studies mm-hmm. or Native Studies, we're also looking at knowledge keepers.
Yep.
And then there's a whole new world for people to kind of get a handle on that, whether it's looking at the stars and mm-hmm. the moon and the sun, looking at the clouds, looking at the plants and animals, and then you can get into all of the other areas of using all of those things mm-hmm. in a way that respects everything and everyone.
Yeah.
So did you get that from your mom to bring that into what your work is?
I mean, not what you were just referring to in terms of like institutional education. What I received from her was more institutional education, like Western knowledges and sciences that happen to exist within Indigenous Studies. I would not call myself like a traditional Indigenous knowledge holder, keeper, or any particular title thereof. In fact, I've never even taken Indigenous Studies in my life. I'm a pharmacist, but as a person who is Indigenous and in a family of Indigenous folks, there's a lot of lived and living experience that comes along with what I do and what I've brought to my work. Having said that, just literally watching my mom, like in her classroom, whether she was the student or the teacher, of course, I took in a lot. It was unofficial education, but it was really, you know, Canada's history, like 60s scoop, residential schools, anything and everything colonialism. So I think that I started out with a really good understanding in a way that wasn't academic per se, because I was never tested on it or had to memorize it. I just took in and retained what I thought was important.
So you probably met a lot of people along the way who who carry the knowledge with them.
Yeah.
And they must look at you a little bit. Should I interfere with what you're doing? Mm. Because you're in the professional, and I'm going to use this term, Western science. Yep. But there's a coordination. There's a point where the two come together.
Yes. Right? Yeah.
So do you find people are willing to talk to you, or
of course
sensitive?
Yeah, absolutely willing. And I wonder if some of that is even just who I am, because it can be a really sensitive or contentious topic, that's for sure, to the point where some people won't even bring it up at all. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they not only bring it up with me, but that we engage in conversation, I think is like a compliment that I've created a space where that's even a possibility for them to do and then to continue doing. But at the same time, I am both of those things. I am white Ukrainian on my dad's side, and I am Soto First Nation status Indian for the Indian Act on my mom's side. So all of these knowledge systems, Indigenous and Western, exist within me. Mm-hmm. And if I did not encapsulate both, then I wouldn't be living as my full self. So that conversation happens within my own brain every day.
Yeah. Every time you go to lift your cup of coffee, you kind of think about it.
Yes.
Yeah, that's funny. I understand what you're saying, but I'm thinking of some of the people that that I've met over the years in sort of Ontario, mm-hmm. and I have Wanuskewin when I went out west. That was 1993. My wife and I traveled, and we ended up at Wanuskewin. Mm. With the folks there, and we spent a fair bit of time. And two of the thoughts that I left with were the advice from Wes Findlay, who was the director, and you know, 1993. That's a few years ago, and it stuck with me all along that people have knowledge of the territory or the place they're in.
Mm-hmm.
Listen for it.
Oh yeah,
and that's, you know, that's something that I've carried with me all along, you know, in my teaching with young people, and sharing the love of the outdoors, but understanding it. But what I'm hoping that the universities will do, and we've seen it here at Queen's, mm-hmm. over some time in some courses, is that they'll blend the two together in a way.
Yes.
Introduce you to people who are Indigenous knowledge keepers and what they're talking about, and then introduce you to the other knowledge keepers in whatever their field is. And then as soon as you do that, then there's the Ukrainian people from a long while ago, and there are the Scottish people, and Irish, and then you just keep going in the Arab world, India.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so much knowledge that comes in, so each person's going to be slightly different.
Yeah, of course.
And we have to find a way to work together. So I'm hoping that's what you're going to be talking about in your lecture today. But
a little bit of that, yes, absolutely. And I think that that's kind of been the overall theme of my work thus far in my post-secondary and professional life. I like to use a Western science term for the Western thinkers, and I use an Indigenous term for the Indigenous thinkers to describe how I see my role. And so on the Western side, I call myself an emulsifier because there are certainly, like the oil phase and water phase, if you were to put oil and water into a pot, sure, they're both sitting there, existing together, but they're not really interacting, right? They're not really doing much together. You need them to hold hands and move forward together, and so you need someone who's got a bit of both phases, right? And so I'm a bit of both of those phases. Mm-hmm. On the Indigenous side, I would say that I'm more of a weaver. It's a term that makes sense to people, of weaving together knowledge systems. Sometimes, like from my prairie indigenous roots, sweetgrass is very common and certainly common across the country too. But we even look at sweetgrass as each strand being a braid of a different knowledge system or of a different time, past, present, future, for example. And some of the teachings around braiding sweetgrass include, well, if you've ever done a braid or made a braid, you know that a certain amount of tension is required, right? Mm-hmm. So you cannot bring them together without any tension. So I share that as a, this is to be expected when we're having these tense discussions about the knowledge systems coming together or not. You need to bring them together. We need tension. Mm-hmm. So anyway, emulsifier or a weaver, we can go with either or both terms to describe myself, but yes, that's absolutely my role.
Actually, the weaving part I understand because we've done that with lots of young people over the time. But the emulsifier one, I'm going to use differently when I look at my salad at night because we put, you know, balsamic vinegar and olive oil together. And,
exactly.
Yeah, and they sit in the jar. And then you have to. It takes the lettuce or the tomato or whatever to go with it. So.
Yeah.
You've sparked something for me. Is that with our cooking that we're going to look at that again and I'll remember you.
Fair.
Yeah. Now, what I'd like to do, if you don't mind, is to end in a different direction.
Sure.
What are some of the things that you like to do that get you away from the world of your work, healthcare?
You know, there's not even that much because I don't feel any need to get away from the world of my work. I really enjoy what I do and sometimes feel like I don't want to tell people that I get a paycheck for doing what I do because I just absolutely love it. What a gift, what a privilege, what power to be, you know, bestowed with. So I don't feel like I want to escape. And in fact, even in the last few years living in Toronto, I haven't even thought about taking vacations because I don't want to leave the city. No. I've just really found home there and really found community and found myself, to be honest, in Toronto. So having said that, though, I, of course, like to continue to make relations and be social with friends, family. I'm a cyclist. I love going to the gym. Mm. I like taking in the arts. I just went to the opera and a couple of days ago. I like going to musicals and plays and drag shows, keeping up with some of my favorite TV shows and whatnot. So I still find time for all of those things. But like I said, I just like doing my work.
Very nice. Well, Yaris, thank you very much for taking the time and spending with us. And I'm just going to leave the last word with you. If you would like to say something to all of the young people who are thinking about, you know, first, second, third year university students and the direction they're going to be taking, what advice would you give?
Yeah, I mean, I have so much advice, and that could probably be an entire podcast series, to be honest. But there's a place for you. We need you. The world needs everyone, right? We all have a role to contribute in society and among Earth and perhaps beyond. And even in times where you may not see yourself, your whole self, or parts of the identities that make up yourself reflected in academia or at the front of classrooms or subject areas, then you be that person, right? Unfortunately or fortunately, I was the first but still the only Indigenous pharmacist academic in North America. And I haven't even actually found others around the world. So there's been a lot of pressure and fear and, you know, moving through the unknown with this role and with this title. But with growing up in academia and in pharmacy without ever seeing someone like me or who shares my identities, all the more reason for me to be there. But overcoming that fear and overcoming the negative self-talk of, oh, maybe this isn't for me, maybe I'm not good enough because you haven't seen someone like you in spaces like that, all the more reason why you need to, right? So we need you.
Miigwech.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Wow. Village on lots of- John, how are you today?
Doing well, Douglas. How are you this morning?
It's really a lovely day. It's a beautiful fall day here in downtown Kingston, and it's 12 degrees. So I see you're wearing your toque and your windbreaker. But tell me a little bit about the work that you're doing in your master's program.
Yeah, so I'm currently a master's in structural engineering student here at Queen's University. I perform my undergraduate here. I just finished that up in civil engineering, would have been last spring. So I'm carrying forward some of that work over at the West Campus Geo Lab, which is right next to Richardson Stadium. And we're working in there to create a new facility, first of its kind. And the goal of that is to simulate differential ground movements. And we're looking at buried infrastructure, so things like water mains, sewer lines, and what we're looking to do is look at the response of those pipelines to a series of ground movements, whether those are normal faults, things that arise after earthquakes, or even if it's just tunneling-induced ground movements that we look at maybe in more major cities.
The idea of tunneling in a major city, I worry about tunneling under a major highway, but you're going to find out what happens when you start doing that, eh?
Yeah, so we've got a lot of things like subway systems and other tunnel networks that are prominent in some of these larger cities. And as you know, places like Toronto and surrounding areas have lots of infrastructure to ensure that people get drinking water and that their homes are functioning properly. So we're looking at, if we have issues below ground in these tunnels, that are these pipelines and sewer lines still holding up okay?
So this will be really important technology if you can get it small enough to go into smaller communities so that people in small towns could still use them, because there are all kinds of things buried out there that need to be looked at again, whether it's a major pipeline going through my little community or there may have been something buried there, mm-hmm. or even an old well set up.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we have not too many natural disasters up here in Ontario, but when those things do happen, it is easy to monitor those above ground. You can look at a building and see is it still standing or falling down, but to your point, it is difficult to simply look at the ground and imagine whether or not the pipeline 10, 20 feet below the ground is still functioning properly. So being able to monitor those things is going to be crucial going
forward.
So
is that what you're working on now, for a device that will let me in a smaller setting, not the big cities?
Yeah, so my master's right now is looking at the response of those pipelines. So we're monitoring pipes in our facility. We've got some deep pits out on West Campus. So what we do is we're creating a moving floor system at the bottom of these pits, placing a pipe buried in soil over top of it with some sensors monitoring it, so that when we shift the floors beneath, moving the soil, which we are dictating, we're monitoring how the pipeline responds. So currently they're able to monitor ground movements in the real world, so when those ground movements occur, we can then infer how the pipeline is responding as well, looking more specifically at joints and different branches.
So this is the fun part about doing research.
Yeah, so it's been a blast. I'm working under three supervisors right now, Dr. Woods, Dr. Neil Holt, and Dr. Ian Moore. So it's been great to work with those three individuals, and I've learned a lot from them.
Are you going to carry on your studies and do a PhD in it? Or
I'm not too sure at the moment. It's going to be a two-year project. I think this will set us up well, or set more individuals up well down the road to use this facility in the future. So I think my time may come to an end after 2 years, but it'll be nice for future students to be able to use this new facility.
Wow, John, you're doing a great job. So I'd love to come and look at this sometime, maybe in the wintertime when I can see what happens with how cold it is on top. And also, I was thinking as you're talking, what about the actual materials that's in that? Because metals from a long time ago with pipes are different than they are in more recent times. And then if you go back to the old clay, mm-hmm. Because people buried lead and clay and piping.
Yeah, so there is a lot of great work going on out at the lab. Some students testing some clay pipes, others looking at some plastic variations, whether that's PVC pipes or HDP pipes. We've also got people that have tested cast iron steel in the past. So there's a lot of opportunities that I think people in industry are quite interested to see us put to the test.
Wow, this is going to be fantastic. I'm looking for your paper afterwards. I'll see what you come up with.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, John, thanks very much. I appreciate that.
Hey, thanks again, Douglas.
Okay.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Lisa Dockstader. I'm from the Oneida and Mohawk Nation, and I sit with the Bears. My name is Ness Young. I'm my first year of the Master's in Public Health Program at Queen's University, and I am from the Mohawk Nation Turtle Clan Band of Six Nations in the Grand River Territory. So we've been asked to do a drum opening for the speaker this evening. And so the one song that we thought would be a good song to do for tonight is, we call it the Water Song. It's called Wichita Duya. And one of the reasons we picked it is it's one of our more popular songs. So we were hoping that maybe there would be some people here who might know it and might be able to sing along with us, so we're not up here singing all by ourselves. But the other reason is, so in our teachings, water is a medicine. And so when we sing this song, we think about the bodies of water. And we sing for the healing of that water. But also, as human beings, we're made up of water as well. And so when we sing this song, we also sing it to each other for healing.
Thank you so much, Lisa, Ness. That was wonderful drumming, and thank you for opening for today's lecture. So hello, everyone. I'm Wiley Chung. I am your host this evening. I am the Director of Equity, Diversity, Inclusion, Indigeneity, and Accessibility here at our Queen's Medical School. I'm also the Chair of the MD Program EDIIA Advisory Committee. And I'm excited to welcome you today to the Nancy Tatum and Donna Henderson Lectureship. I'd like to start with a land acknowledgement. I want to acknowledge that we are currently situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee people. This land holds a long and rich history predating the earliest European colonies, and remains deeply significant to the indigenous people who lived and continue to live on these lands. Although my ancestors endured racist policies such as the Chinese head tax and the Chinese Exclusion Act, and we were not directly involved with any of the atrocities committed against indigenous people in their land, my ancestors were still immigrants who all benefited from a colonized system that oppressed the indigenous people. Pain of being victims of racism does not justify. We have all benefited from a colonial system and the land we use daily. I am aware that my ancestors and I are still uninvited guests, and I am very grateful to be able to live, learn, teach, and play on these lands. This acknowledgement is a small but important part of my ongoing commitment to honoring Indigenous communities and advancing reconciliation. In my work, I am committed to decolonizing and indigenizing the surgical curriculum in residency. I'm also proud that our EDIA committee in our medical school includes Indigenous student representation, ensuring their voices and perspectives are part of our collective decision-making and curricular change. I'm especially grateful to be here today for the Dr. M. Nancy Tatum and Donna Henderson lecture titled A Storied Life of Woven Threads, A Two-Spirit Indigenous Pharmacist Path to Better Healthcare. I want to take this opportunity again to thank our drummers, Lisa Dockstater, she's from Four Directions, and Ness Young, our Indigenous learner here at Queen's. I want to again thank our donors, Dr. Nancy Tatum and Donna Henderson. Thank you so much for making this event happen. This event today was created by these two generous donors to bring speakers to campus to present on issues related to diversity and inclusion here at Queen's Medical School. The passion and leadership of Nancy and Donna are greatly appreciated by all of us in attendance. So once again, thank you. I'd also like to take this opportunity to thank our MD EDIA Advisory Committee, and especially Lauren Breslin for all her help in helping to pick our wonderful speaker with our committee, and also with helping our wonderful QHS team here facilitate the session today. Now, just in terms of some housekeeping, this session is also recorded in real time, and it's presented live. We do have quite a lot of attendees online. I think there were at least 100 that were registered for this event. I also want to inform you that this session is recorded. It's going to be shared with other medical students on our Elentra platform online. And I want to acknowledge and also thank our ASL speakers, Courtney Drummond and James Markin. So thank you. Now, without further ado, I want to introduce our speaker, Dr. Jairus Swidrovic. A member of Yellow Quill First Nation, Dr. Strovic's maternal grandmother was a residential school survivor, and his mother, a survivor of the 60s scoop. He received a Bachelor's of Science in Pharmacy from the University of Saskatchewan in 2010, a Doctor of Pharmacy, a PharmD, from the University of Toronto in 2013, and a PhD in Education from the University of Saskatchewan in 2024. For which he was awarded both the Governor General's Gold Medal and a National Dissertation Award from the Canadian Association for Graduate Studies. In his earlier years as a health professional, Dr. Sidrovic noticed the lack of representation of Indigenous peoples in healthcare and the inadequate education of healthcare workers on Indigenous history, health, and culture. Since then, he began dedicating his work as a pharmacist and educator to bridge the gaps in understanding of Indigenous issues and reconciliation. A leader in his field, his PhD dissertation led to major changes in the accreditation standards for entry to practice pharmacy degree programs across the country and the creation of North America's first organization for Indigenous pharmacy professionals, known as the Indigenous Pharmacy Professionals of Canada. Dr. Stradrovic's commitment to fighting against systemic issues in health literacy and practices has also landed him a role as a director on several boards, including the Sanctum Care Group, Solutions for Kids in Pain, Pain Ontario, the 519, and others. Selected by the Canadian Associate Assistant Deputy Minister of Health in 2019, Dr. Stradrovic's one of eight members appointed to the Canadian Pain Task Force, which he then went on to publish three major reports that directed the creation of chronic pain policy team within Health Canada. He is a highly sought-after academic researcher, speaker, and the only Indigenous pharmacist faculty member in pharmacy in North America. Dr. Stradrovic has also been appointed to the Public Health Agency of Canada's National Collaborating Centre for Indigenous Health and was appointed as an Institute Advisory Board member for the Canadian Institutes of Health Research Institute of Indigenous Peoples Health. In 2025, Dr. Stradrovic launched his alter ego, Prescription, a two-spirit drag queen who is on a mission to improve healthcare and education for, by, and about 2S LGBTQI+ people. Pris is a clinician, researcher, performer, and public speaker who inspires audiences to be the change they wish to see in the world. Pris models what living your most authentic life can look like and combines the powers of drag, art, and science to tackle society's most pressing issues. Everyone, please welcome Dr. Stradrovic.
Thank you, everyone. This is your last chance to run away to, if you don't want to be here anymore. Thank you for all the people who made this series happen. For the drummers, thank you so much. It's really lovely to especially hear like life giver voices or female women voices. For so long, women were not allowed to practice our ceremonies when we had to get permission from the Indian agent, which, by the way, was never enacted as official policy in Canada. But the RCMP, who were created to control Indians, you had to ask them for permission to leave your reserve for any reason, to go to visit someone, to sell goods and services, etc. So the men were allowed to leave to go hunt and whatnot. So they'd say, yeah, we're going hunting. And then they would go practice their ceremony. And for quite some time, some of the ceremonies, the songs and the drumming was like taken over by men. And so it's really wonderful to see how so many of our women, life givers, two-spirit folks have reclaimed and continue to play and sing. So thank you so much for that. All right. I stopped giving land acknowledgements myself, and I instead offer some different insight. So like we continue to give land acknowledgements instead of land itself. Ooh, provocative, right? Something else I have seen that's quite effective before is like if I was just going to come over here and say I'd like to acknowledge that this is his iPhone and never give it back. Right? So it's kind of like, what's up? What's that all about? Right? So I always ask for a request for there to be something more, right? Rather than a script. It's kind of like it makes me feel uncomfortable anyway. So thank you so much for that, like personalization, you know, adding your own flair to something like a land acknowledgement. What I was asked to talk about is really my own journey. Some of the stories throughout that journey, how it's shaped what I do and even what I don't do, and to comment throughout on the role of storytelling through healthcare. So let me do that. My storied life so far really is a highlight of how loneliness, isolation, pain, loss, racism, and so much more transformed me, my family, my purpose, and my path in life, but has ultimately, I think, led to, I hope, better healthcare for everybody. A little bit more about me for self-situation. My spirit name is Wapiska Kinu, or White Eagle. I walk with two clans, Otter Clan and Bear Clan, in my lineage. And the Otter Clan specifically, I have a lot of ongoing teaching to take from the Otter. So I've often commented on what I described as a like uncomfortable feeling of being able to walk in two worlds, but also choose when I walk in those two worlds. I see my family members, my cousins, my aunts, my uncles, general community members who don't get that option. They walk through the world in a way that the world sees them exactly for one particular identity. I can present myself like this, or I can present myself as like a cis, perhaps straight, white man walking through the streets. And having that option, having that ability has come with a lot of responsibility, and I really had to understand that. In fact, I've had to understand and accept that for those same reasons, particularly my whiteness, my maleness, and other factors have taken me to where I am today. There's a reason it's me as the only Indigenous pharmacy faculty member versus someone else, being male and whiteness and many other privileges I've had in life. But I look to the Otter because they go in water and on land, and they choose when they're in water and on land. So how do you do that, right? What role do you play when you're in either one of these worlds? What do you take from one of those worlds and bring to the other? So I continue to learn. Up here, you see my great-grandmother, Laura Gilbert. In the top middle, my grandmother, Marina Gilbert, or later Marina Elder. And then my mother, Cheryl, or Sherry Elder, later became Swidrovich, like my Ukrainian father. I'm blessed with two wonderful sisters who still both live in Saskatoon. And on the bottom over here is my great-grandfather, Pete Gilbert, who was a traditional Soto medicine man. We're still in this weird era of pretendians, and I do use that term. I even use the term fake Métis. And these terms have unfortunately turned the spotlight onto Indigenous folks, but the whole problem is that these aren't Indigenous folks, right? So there's many people, unfortunately, who are claiming indigeneity without any whatsoever. In fact, Dr. Kim Tallbear, a researcher, First Nations researcher at the University of Alberta, estimates that still today in 2025, 25% of Indigenous academics aren't. They're not. So I share my family names, Kwakatus, LaPlante, Gilbert, and Elder, and even a straight-up copy of my status card, because if I was in an audience too, I do want to know who I'm hearing from. I've really been hurt and burned by even Two-Spirit elders who, A, weren't Two-Spirit, B, weren't even Indigenous, and I took a lot of my Two-Spirit teachings from that person, so I've had to go back and figure out what was really true and what wasn't, and it's a really hard process to go through. So here I am as a young boy, and right from the get-go, I mean, spoiler alert, I don't know why people didn't know right away that like this kid is gay or queer, okay? It's like, it was very clear, but I didn't even know it for quite some time. The picture you see here was from my grade one parent-teacher interview night, and our assignment was to draw a picture of our favorite animal and leave it on the top of our desk for our parents to see and engage in conversation with our teacher about. But I, as usual, refused to do that, and I only ever wanted to draw my mom in a princess dress with the crown in the exact way that I always saw her. My mom has forever been like my person. She has been the most influential, I think, in my life, and I've never wanted to be away from her. In fact, in these years of when I was around that age, I would call out, if they made me sleep in my own room, I'd find a way to get back into their room, my parents' room, and I would yell out like, Mom, I'm depressed. And I think what I meant was like, I'm anxious. I maybe was depressed too for some time, and later that I very much was in life, but I couldn't help but get over this fear that my mom might die in the night. And that stayed with me for so long, to the point where I hated every member of my family's birthday parties. I didn't want to celebrate. I didn't want to sing happy birthday because that meant they're all getting older and my mom's getting older. And that means she's going to die one day. It just totally made me streamline ahead to be like a homeboy and really just stay with my mom at all times. My two wonderful sisters who I'm blessed to be around, they were really my only friends, to be honest. So a bit of like a sad story, I suppose. My first birthday party was when I was 20. So I didn't have friends. I didn't have anybody to invite to a birthday party. It was like my one cousin, Adam, and me and my mom, who would go rent a hotel room and go like water sliding, because that's what I love to do. I would tell my family that, no, that's just really what I want to do. I don't want to have a birthday party, because I never wanted to tell them what it actually was like at school or in my social situations. My friends, or I guess not friends, peers, whether in the playground or in the classroom, until I hit puberty, all of them asked me, are you a boy or are you a girl? And I did not have the language to really respond to that question. So all I knew was, I'm a boy. And I don't really have anything else to say there. I had never heard of two-spirit. I had never heard of genderqueer. I had never heard of anything other than cis man, cis woman, right? So yeah, I'm a boy. And that's how I would respond to things. But that's not really how they were always seeing me. So I identified a lot more with the girls and the women in my family and in my social environment. So my sisters were everything to me. I learned how to braid from them, playing with Barbies, playing house, playing school, you name it. And then when my younger sister was born, I was in grade 2. And to be quite honest, I was quite disappointed when my mom told me that she was pregnant, because the first thing I thought was, oh no, I always see commercials about winning a trip for a family of 4 to Disneyland, and now we're going to be 5. I haven't seen any trips for a family of 5, so like, oh no. Anyway, so I was a bit upset. But the day that she was born, in fact, the week she was born, I had a massive pin that took up like half my chest that said my new baby sister, with a brand new picture of her as a baby. And I've continued to basically be like a father figure to her, she has said, throughout her life. Wanting to find a path or a place for myself as I moved through school was really difficult. I didn't want to play sports. I think I was a bit of a disappointment to my dad. I'll just straight up say that. My parents used to tell me like, oh, you know, yes, we had Jenna, but, you know, your dad really wanted another boy. And it made me think, and maybe I share stories like this so that maybe you can be conscious of how some children might take such information in your lives, is what I heard was, oh, I was so disappointing of a boy that he still needed another one, right? He needed a son to go play catch with or hockey with, talk about sports with, or whatever it was that he needed a boy for. And I was clearly not good enough as a boy, right? Most of the people around me saw me as a girl, even though I was living as a boy. As I went through high school, I really found a place in drama. And this comes back into everything that I have to say with you tonight. I was in every show except one, cut from A Midsummer Night's Dream, in my high school career. Still a little bit bitter about that. But I was only ever a non-named role once, Mr. Ramsden. Thank you very much. This was me in a play called Fools. But it was a wild opportunity for me to find a moment in time where I had like built-in friends, right? The most sad parts of my high school career was that last show, that last musical, or that last play. And I knew that when school ends, every day thereafter, I'm just going to go home by myself, right? I had people to hang around with. I had friends there. I was able to be somebody else on stage and not really feel ashamed or scared about people making fun of Jairus. They'd be making fun of Vladimir Yusakevich in the play Fools. So I found a lot of escape through drama, and quite honestly, flash forward in life, it's really helped me out with being like a teacher or a professor or a speaker. I don't get nervous in front of audiences. What I do get nervous about is, I hope that you're getting something out of this versus me being scared to speak. Although this was a little bit of a staged picture, at least on my part, when I saw someone taking a picture, I needed to look like I was really into this football game. This was the Super Bowl. We were watching it in Vegas, my friends and I. And, you know, when I look back at photos like this from that time of my life, I really just kind of see sadness. And I couldn't appreciate at the time how in chains I was. And for gender and sexually diverse people in your lives, or perhaps even for you yourself, I can only appreciate now how taxing it is every moment of every day. What am I wearing? What am I not wearing? What am I going to watch and laugh about or smile about? And are people going to see me laughing and smiling about that thing? My posture, who I'm associating with. Absolutely every moment of every day, you're policing yourself. It's so exhausting. No wonder so many of us live with depression or anxiety, because we put ourselves in these cages. I would try to convince myself so much that, no, I am not gay, bi, pansexual, whatever. I'm just a cis, straight man. And I really wanted to believe that, but I very much was not. In my early 20s, I had experimented with one man at one point at age 23 and convinced myself, no, that was absolutely not me. I'm so glad I know that now. That was just, you know, whatever, a blip in time. 4 years later, one more time. Yeah, okay, now it's confirmed. That's absolutely not me, right? 4 years later, again, and well, guess what? It is me. But I couldn't see a life for myself with who I actually was. And as I started to learn terms like two-spirit, queer, gay, I was just like, oh my gosh, just the identities are adding up here. And I also lived with and still live with profound hearing loss. I'm not wearing my hearing aids right now because it kind of feels echoey when I give a talk, but I can't even hear fire alarms. I never knew that fridges beeped when you leave them open too much. And I've missed a lot in life. I cried when I put my hearing aids in and was just filling a pot with water and was like, oh my gosh, like that's what that sounds like, holy. So having profound hearing loss, being gay, bi, pansexual, I still don't actually know, queer, two-spirit, indigenous, my goodness, these were a lot of layers, and I couldn't see, and I still don't see anyone with all of those same intersectional identities, at least not in the spaces that I occupy. So I felt like I still had to keep playing this role, but oh my goodness, was it ever matched with profound sadness. This theme of strong difficulties continued to progress throughout my life, which, again, flash forward, the reason we're here today is, how did these go to